You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Prime time on 1080 The Fan.
Our slogan is, if it's no Scottish, it's crap!
This is a British Open Week edition of Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling. Don't wait for comfort with Area Heating and Cooling. Go to areaheating.com today, your local train comfort specialists. It's hard to stop a train.
It's British Open Week on Prime Time with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
It is British Open Week, and we will talk about what happened today. Or, I guess, well, yeah, today. Coming up in 10 minutes.
Last night, I guess.
Yeah, it was on at 10:30.
I watched Sandy get around the course a little bit, old Sandy.
Yeah, Sandy Lyle, man. Yeah, so that thing comes on at 10:30 our time.
Yeah.
And it goes, like, this is the best coverage of a major because they cover the whole thing on Golf Channel until, I don't know when they went off the air, maybe like 1 o'clock today or something. Well, no, it would have been earlier than that, right? Because it's 8 or 9 hours different.
Something like that.
But it is awesome waking up to sports early in the morning. Big fan of that.
Yeah, early morning sports, like in the college football world, sometimes they'll go play that game in Ireland, like Notre Dame will play Navy or something, and that game will be on at like 6:30, 7 in the morning. You wake up, you're like, hey, football. Well, I was doing that, like I was getting ready to go to bed, and I always do the, oh, let's take what was like 11 o'clock, 11:30. I was like,
take a lap.
Yeah, you take one more lap to see if like there's a Stallone movie or like a good Skinamax film on. Or film, you're like, hey.
Skinamax film.
Yeah, it's one new
sounds
term.
Even dirtier.
It is. You got like, just a trip around, and then I was like, oh, yeah, British Open's on. Flipped over and watched that for 45 minutes.
All right, so we'll get to that in 10 minutes, but are they still jockeying with the targeting, the helmet-to-helmet rule in the NFL?
Yes, and so I saw this article today where it tried to explain it, and the NFL is trying to make it clear. But after reading the article like four different times, I'm still not 100% certain on what's going to happen. I do know that if you make contact with another player with the crown of your helmet, so like your forehead or back, that supposedly that is a penalty no matter who does it, regardless of the intent. And yet it seems like they're trying to put some language in here that is going to prevent it from being called on every single play.
So if two linemen lock horns and their helmets, I mean, obviously.
Well, this depends. They're basically saying that if tackles and like defensive ends do it, then yes, it'll be called. But if interior linemen do it, maybe, maybe not.
Really?
So Dan Quinn, who I guess he's one of the guys that is on the competition committee, the coach of the Falcons. He has put together like a videotape of this, and they're sending it around to the different teams, and he's narrating it. And someone even asked him about linemen and how this is going to go. And Quinn said that he was focusing the defensive line section on the tackles and the defensive ends where there's more space, and that you can actually, I guess, make a decision on whether or not to lower your head. But as far as the interior goes, this was Quinn's comment. He goes, I couldn't see where it would be very likely called on the inside guys. Not saying that it couldn't, but contact happens so quickly when two guys are in a stance across from one another that it'd be difficult. So I chose examples where I thought the players had a chance to make a decision when entering into contact. So even he, who is on the committee, who his owner is like the guy, Arthur Blank, even he's not sure how this is going to be called.
Okay, so doesn't it, and this applies to anyone on the field, right?
Yes.
Like you said?
Yes, they...
Even the running back carrying the ball.
Running back carrying the ball, anybody. Except for a quarterback during a quarterback sneak. Evidently, he can lower the head all he wants.
Got to protect Tom Brady.
Because they said that's not the intent, that he's not trying to hit anyone with his helmet. But neither would a receiver going over the middle that catches the ball and lowers his head to protect himself. Technically, that is going to be a penalty. When you see a guy, according to this article... And the NFL's own language, if you're going over the middle, you catch the ball, and you see it all the time where receivers try to get small because they know the hit's coming. If he lowers his head and makes contact with the defender as he's going across, that's a penalty. But I don't understand how that's any different than a quarterback who's trying to do a quarterback sneak and, again, is just trying to protect himself and lean forward. But they're saying one's okay and one's probably not okay.
Ah, keyword probably.
Well, that's it. Like,
here's what I think they're doing. This is what they're doing, I think. Can I tell you?
Yeah, please explain it to me.
I think that all they're doing is they're giving the officials a wider swath.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're saying, you know, you could call all of it. Obviously they won't, but they want for the 20% or the 10% or the 5% that's a little questionable, they're giving the officials more power to call that so as to better clean up the game.
Yes, but herein lies my fear, because I agree with what you said in principle, but this is my fear. This is all hunky-dory until you get into a situation where this starts deciding games, huge plays, because you have such leeway here, right? I get that they're trying to give the officials an out here not to throw a flag on every single play, because as the original rule was written, this was a death sentence. And they did try to clean up the language. They are saying now that the provision does not prohibit. So the actual rule is using any part of a player's helmet or face mask to butt, spear, ram an opponent. Mm-hmm. This provision does not prohibit incidental contact by the mask or helmet over the course of a normal conventional tackle, block, or opponent. A normal conventional tackle or block of an opponent. So again, that goes to your point of they're trying to make this a broader scope of the officials being able to determine what is and isn't a penalty. But when you give them that sort of leeway, game to game, official to official, situation to situation, this has the potential to be chaos. Because wait until the first time that you get a big catch, a big run that sets up a team to win a ball game, there's contact and a field judge or the referee deems that non-incidental contact and he throws a 15-yard penalty on that. I just think the NFL is setting themselves up here for a colossal PR nightmare.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you just have to have faith in the officials.
And I don't.
Yeah. I maybe have a little bit more than you, but I can understand why you would say that. There's certainly going to be controversies. I don't know about chaos, but there will be controversies. And what's wrong with the idea of they do it in the NBA? You know, they always say you swallow your whistle in the big moments. Why can't NFL officials do that?
I certainly hope they do. I mean, it bugs me a little bit in the world of college football. And look, no one has been screaming from the mountaintops louder than me that football should be safer, can be safer.
But hold on. Before you get to that, I think there's a big difference between NFL officials and college officials.
Agreed.
College officials aren't very good.
I hate the rule in college football where a guy makes incidental contact and he ends up getting kicked out of a game.
I know. It's horrible.
And it's so arbitrary on where those things are called and how they're called. And that's my fear here, is that it's just going to be a crapshoot. It's like almost where we got to the point of what's a catch and what isn't a catch. I'm fearful that we're going to get three more years of this, of what is or isn't a helmet penalty.
What is the actual penalty? Is it 15 yards?
It's 15 yards.
It's a personal foul?
It's personal foul.
Nothing smaller? There's no 5 or 10 yarders? It's everything? If they throw the flag, it's 15 yards?
I believe that is correct. Mm-hmm. I'll have to go double check that, but I believe that that is a personal foul.
Well, I'm going to go in optimistic and say that, yeah, I see what you're saying, but no, they probably won't call a lot of this stuff, but there will be calls that we will be debating every Monday. There's no question.
I just think it's significant that we're here. Training camp has started and they're still tweaking the language of how the rule book actually states from what their original statement was on this, and that we still don't have clarity as camps open up. And if we don't have clarity, the players don't have clarity, the coaches don't have clarity, how the hell do the officials have clarity, and how does this get called consistently? It's one of those things as the preseason rolls out here, and the Ravens and Bears are already in camp, and everyone else is going to be here pretty quick. Two things to watch in the preseason games, you know, because preseason football can be rough to watch. One, the new kickoff rules and how that's going to impact the game, because mm-hmm. I think that has a chance to really be different and unique and maybe actually more exciting for the game of football. And then this helmet rule and how it's called, and if we can find some sort of a uniform policy here, or are we going to just have another frustrating rule? Because we've had these before in the NFL where we have to deal with this crap, and it seems like it slows down, impacts games, and makes the game worse.
What about helmet airbags? You think that's a solution here?
You know, they have those for bicycles.
Do they really?
So I saw this a while back. There was a lady, and she won some sort of prize for it, but it's a bike helmet that's not really a bike helmet. It's a collar that like goes around your neck. It looks like you're wearing like a scarf. And then on impact, it senses that you've been in a crash, and then it inflates and creates a little air dome around your head.
Wow.
So it's a bike helmet without having to wear a bike helmet.
Unbelievable.
Does that work, you think?
Is that better than just wearing a helmet?
Well, no. Wow. I'm just saying in the NFL, they have those now. You can buy a helmet airbag for yourself if you're out and about.
All right.
But we know there's technology. Well, this is the other frustrating part about football. For all of them saying that they want to make the game safer and they care about it, there's ways to make the game safer with better technology, and we won't do it. We know there's ways. Softer shell helmets.
Oh, for sure.
Extra padding. Remember, Steve Kelso used to wear that little soft shell on the top part of his helmet.
Well, doesn't the military have like way better helmet way technology better than the NFL?
Yes. And so do motorcycle drivers and all this. And there is a better helmet that we could be putting on people's heads, and we won't do it because cost, liability, admitting that the old stuff didn't work, and a lot of it is aesthetics. That people don't want to see weird-looking things.
Didn't we talk about this years ago where there was an article about how the dirty little secret of the NFL, one of them, one of the many, is that they love crack of the helmets.
Yes.
They don't want that to go away.
Nope.
They want that in any new technology that comes about.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next, let's check in at the Open, 4:15 on The Fan.
This is a British Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling.
On 1080 The Fan.
Coming up in the news, we'll talk about falls. Not like waterfalls.
And like old people falling?
Not old people. These are young people.
Young people are falling.
Some people are surviving. Other people are dying. It's crazy.
Well, stop falling. Be an athlete. Stay on your feet.
Be an athlete.
I mean, if you get to an NFL camp, that's like one of the big things is if you fall down, if you're on the ground, that is not acceptable. Because falling down on the ground means guys blowing stuff out, like knees, ankles. So if you go down to the ground, you get just reamed. And that's what they tell you. Be an athlete. Stay on your feet. Not allowed to go down to the ground.
So looking at the Open leaderboard, round one in the books.
Is it wrong that I still think it's weird that it's called the Open? It's the British Open.
Yeah, I'm not really sure if it can be called the British Open anymore.
Like, no one. Like, if you refer to it as the British Open, people get all pissed about it.
They do? Well, it's in all of our imaging on the station says British Open.
I know. Be careful. Some guy from over there is going to be all pissy about it.
Like, yeah,
it's the Open Championship, and it's a little like when people say, like, you know, instead of Ohio State University, you know, say that. It's the Ohio State University. I get it. Like, you started the game of golf, right? It was just called the Open Championship. But it's like, we have the U.S. Open. You have the British Open. It's played over there. Get over yourself.
Well, whatever it's called, it's going on.
Yes.
And the timing of it is wonderful because it starts at 10:30 at night here. And then you can stay up as late as you want, drinking, and fall asleep. And the same tournament, same round, is on when you wake back up. And so then you just start drinking. And I mean, you have a coffee, and then you watch it.
Can I tell you that your little, the stuff, that what do you call it, that you brought back from Italy?
Oh, limoncello.
Boy,
what'd
that
you think?
Is simply delightful.
Did you make a limoncello spritz?
I made more than one limoncello spritz.
Okay, so
good.
Let me ask again, because I forgot. It is the limoncello.
Yes.
It is Prosecco. Mm-hmm. And then lemon sorbet or sherbet?
Sorbet. Yeah, not sherbet. Sorbet.
Sherbet.
And then if you don't put the sorbet in, you can do a little soda water.
Yeah, and I did not go soda water. I got the sorbet.
Yeah,
and
good call,
I'll tell
man.
You that.
It's a nice drink, isn't it?
It was, except that I've got a problem with it. I got a big problem.
You're an alcoholic now?
You only brought me the one little bottle.
Yeah. Like, well, you can buy limoncello here.
That went really quick. Yeah, but that supposedly
is like legit the
stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that drink was simply delightful, and it did not last very long. And that whole one shot, I may have.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, I may have upped
sure.
the ante a little
you
bit.
You know, they're sneaky. Did I tell you the story? Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. I can't remember.
Yeah, you had to carry your wife out?
Yeah, my wife cashed out of a. She was. So we were staying at this place in. what town were we in? Monterosa Amati, the Cinque Terre, the Italian Riviera. And we had this little pub, this little restaurant and bar right down below our flat. And I was doing something, showering up or something. And my wife had been down there all freaking day. And I go down and check in on her, and she's cashing out. And she had had 8 of those puppies, lemon spritzes. And she was fine. She was happy. I could tell. I was like, all right, she's getting lit up down here. This is great. Perfect. Mm-hmm. You're on vacation, right?
Yeah.
Not even 2 hours. It was probably an hour later. We're sitting down at dinner. She cannot function. She can't speak. And she looks at me, and I look at her, and I said, let's go.
It's time to go.
And I had to usher her out of dinner before she got her dinner.
I love.
Those things sneak up on
those
you.
Those are great. So I had the one. I tried it. And I was like, this is simply delightful. And then let's just say that the rest of the lemon...
Limoncello.
The cello. Yeah, that it basically lasted 2 drinks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It's aggressive, dude.
Well, it was delightful.
That's pretty aggressive. I thought you tried to savor the bottle a little bit.
Yeah, that's a little much. But, you know, they teach their own.
we just went at it.
Alcoholics Anonymous.
We got it done. Well, you know what? There's a lot of this to absorb. We, strong pores at the Skanik household.
Okay, so Kevin Kisner is leading 5 under.
USA. USA. Take that, Open Championship.
There's a couple of South Africans you've never heard of. 4 under. Xander Lombard.
No.
Cool
no
name.
No idea.
And Eric Van Ruyen or something. I don't know. He played.
Not going to win the Open.
I guess he played at the University of Minnesota. He's rowing the boat.
He's not going to Turdville.
You think he rowed his boat all the way over there?
I'd like to think so.
Tournament.
PJ Fleck over there rowing with him.
And
you're headed towards Turdville.
Oh, Tony Finau.
Yeah, he's 4 under.
Yeah, that was a nice pick, Tony Finau, if you picked him.
I think I want to say he was right around that 10th or 12th as far as best odds go.
He was playing well.
He was up there.
Tiger Woods went even par. He went out in 34, but then he made a couple bogeys coming in. The thing about it was the weather cooperated. It was pretty nice out there. The wind didn't really kick up.
It looked gorgeous.
It was
last night. I mean, it looked stellar.
I mean, Carnoustie, when the wind kicks up, can be really, really difficult, but they didn't have that today. So I saw where Justin Thomas, cause the fairways are running so fast. He hit a 403 yard 3-wood.
Jeez.
3-wood.
Good Lord.
He also hit, they were interviewing him after the round. And the guy said that he hit a 240-yard wedge. Just roll, get and roll.
Come again? 240-yard pitching wedge.
Yeah. Well. So Tiger showed up with that, the tape. What do they call that tape?
Oh, yeah.
That the athletes wear?
I'm trying to remember what the hell that is.
Is it kinesio tape?
Something like that, but it's.
Am I wrong about that?
You're in the neighborhood, but that's not how you pronounce it. But I think you're in the neighborhood.
So he said he slept crooked.
The text program will get you on that.
So he said he slept crooked. And he had a sore neck, and he had that crap on the back of his like popping up out of his collar on his neck.
Yeah,
I would think that would be really hard to play with.
I never that wasn't.
Have you ever used that stuff?
No, that wasn't a thing when I played, and now I'm too old and rickety. I don't care enough about myself to put it on there. But you see. You see athletes wearing it all the time. You see bros in the gym like that are wearing it, but what does it do? Well, I think it acts just like a support, like a brace. You know, it kind of keeps everything.
But wouldn't that restrict, like for golf, I would think that would restrict the movement, you know, and that's not what you want.
I've never used it.
I think it'd be very weird for golf. Anyway, Tiger had that, and so everybody was freaking out because like, oh my God, it's his back.
Yeah, people are saying KT tape.
He's going to die. KT tape, right? Like it's kinesiology type stuff. It's like kinesio tape.
You're somewhere in that range.
But anyway,
it's all the rage. Like I know volleyball player, tennis players, but like if they can wear it, I don't know why a golfer couldn't.
Yeah, I guess.
Plus, if it's on your neck, it just tries to keep it from being painful when you go to swing.
I don't know. Brendel Chamblee was on there, and he said, I liked his line. He said, Tiger's getting to that age where it's dangerous just to sleep. And boy, if that isn't the truth.
Yeah, well, I mean.
You wake up with just random ailments.
Absolutely, especially when you have kind of beat the hell out of your body, right? It's not like Tiger Woods is like, what is he, 42-ish, 43?
He's my age. I think I just turned 43. I think he's 42 and will turn 43 in December.
Something tells me that there's a little more wear and tear on his body than on the Rob Chesticles. Something tells me that.
Yeah, he's 42, turns 43 December 30th.
Well, think about how many millions of times, and I'm saying millions, he swung a golf club since he's been 3 years old. That's the same motion every time.
Ooh. How many swings has he taken in his life?
Millions.
It's got to be hundreds of millions, doesn't it?
I'm sure it's a number that would floor you. It's millions.
I want that number.
Hundreds of millions? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
That's a lot. But we need to find out how many days he practices and, days off.
How about just, swinging out in his front yard?
Yeah. But do you – I mean, anyone that's done the same repetitive motion, have you ever met, a construction guy that's a roofer or secretaries, that type all day – the guy that did my big arm tattoo, he's like your age, mid 40s or whatever. He's got
I'm not mid 40s.
Well, you're getting there.
I'm 43, dude.
You're getting there.
I'm early 40s.
But he's got a mighty hump on his back because he spent the last 25 years bent over. If you do one motion over and over and over and over again, there's just your body's not meant to do that. And you think about that with a golfer like Tiger Woods, who was so fanatical about it. And then all the stupid Navy SEAL workouts that guy was doing, that guy probably needs 19 rolls of that just to keep everything from falling apart.
All right. So that's the latest from the British Open
or just the Open Championship.
But it starts again here in a few hours. Again, it's 4:30 our time. They're all sleeping right now, and 10:30, they're back out there.
They have to go, so,
it's great.
Start your drinking
a little
later than normal.
No.
Or a little early, and just keep it going through the night.
I'm going to drink right after the show, as I always do, and then by 10:30, I'll be nice and lubed up, ready to go.
There you go.
Fall asleep to a little...
pass out, on the,
to a little gap.
Pass out on number 13.
All right, coming up next, it's time for In the News. We talk people surviving falls. Here's Mike.
This is a British Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, the math bros are out there doing some math for us. Mm-hmm. We're talking about how many swings of a golf club has Tiger Woods taken in his life at the age of 42. And this person says if Tiger hits an average of 200 balls a day, 6 days a week, since he was three, he's hit over 2.4 million golf balls.
I gotta believe it's more than that.
But think about practice swings.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's gonna be more than that. But that gives you a frame of reference. Another one says 200 swings every day for 35 years is 2.5 million swings. So
well, I gotta imagine those guys, not when he was three, but when he was growing up and working on his game, and then when he was at his peak prowess, I gotta believe he's swinging, 400 or 500 times a day. Like some of those, Freddie Couples used to talk about that he would swing until his hands bled. And you ever seen pro golfers' hands? They're like a longshoreman's. I would imagine that's more than 200 swings a day.
Well, think about the days where they don't play in tournaments.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like when you're out there just kind of grinding, I don't know. I got to believe that if that's 2.5 million, I'm going to easily say that he's in the three to four, maybe 4.5 million swings over the course of his life.
So not hundreds of millions.
No.
That was a little overestimate there on my part.
Got a little rambunctious with that that prediction.
July 19th, 2018, time for In the News. Hey. I'm your noted newsman and news contributor Jason Sikanik is over there. We are watching. There is one baseball game on today.
There is. There's only one. I think it's because it's a rainout.
Cardinals and the Cubs.
Is that why they're playing today?
I think so, yes.
A lot of people there. Well, again, it's Wrigley Field.
That's the only thing to do. And
it's the Cardinals.
The Cubbies. I saw it today, and I don't know how legit this was, but the Cubbies are being linked to maybe trying to put together a blockbuster deal for one Jacob DeGrom.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Seeing if they have enough to go out and make him their final piece.
The Oregonian did a blind taste test revealing the top five Portland donut shops.
Really? This is where we're at now?
Donuts are a thing. Donuts are a big thing.
Now,
they really are.
I've lived a lot of different places.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if donuts have ever been a bigger deal than they are here in Portland.
I think you're right about that.
We freak out about it.
We've got a donut thing. It's because of voodoo.
Everywhere you go, everyone has their favorite donut spots, but
voodoo started it.
But here it's and people get pissed if you say that you prefer one over the other. I'm Blue Star is my favorite. That's if you're giving me the choice. But like you say that to a Voodoo Donut person and they'll fight you. They'll cut you.
Well, look, Blue Star Donuts are way better than Voodoo Donuts. It's not close.
Blue Star has the best apple fritter maybe I've ever had. It's unbelievable.
So do you want to know what their top five were?
I'm guessing Voodoo number one.
Voodoo, no. Voodoo's not good, dude.
Well, I just assumed that they
That's yesterday's news.
We've moved on.
Voodoo's the OG.
Yeah.
But that's about it. And you want to know how you know somebody doesn't know what they're talking about when it comes to donuts?
They go Voodoo?
They go to Voodoo.
Then why, if you're down there, like I'll leave the Roseland or whatever, and there's a line around the freaking corner.
Because it's kitschy. And it's like written up on the internet. Like people travel here and they got to go there. Little do they know.
There's better donuts.
Number five, Sesame Donuts on Park Avenue. Number four, Donuts Plus on Cornell.
I've never been to either one of those.
Number three, Angel's Donuts on Alberta.
I have been to Angel's Donuts, and that is a good donut.
Number two, Top Pot, which you can only get in supermarkets.
Really?
That's what it said.
But Top Pot is up in Seattle. Like, but there, I didn't know Top Pot was even down here.
You can get them in supermarkets.
I do like Top Pot. When
good,
we go
good
to,
donut.
When we go to Seattle... that is my son's like go-to. He demands that we go to a Top Pot. My
and number
daughter likes
one,
their coffee.
Again, blind taste test from people at the Oregonian. Number one is Delicious Donuts, which is over on Grand.
I don't know Delicious Donuts.
I know. Blue Star's not on there.
So I've only been to two of the top donut places.
Yeah.
And the Angel's Donuts used to be something else, that one on Alberta.
Yeah, it was called...
The Tony's or
it started with a T.
Yeah, I used to have a friend that lived over there and we would go by sometimes and get a and grab a donut and he was a big fan of it.
Pips is not on that list either, right?
No, Pips is
Pips
not on
Pips is a big famous one here.
Yep.
I didn't know that I could get Top Pot down here.
Look at somebody proclaiming an underrated donut at 7-Eleven.
Really?
Is that true? Could it be?
Hmm. Now, nothing good's at 7-Eleven other than the Slurpee.
You know, I have gotten coffee from there.
The 7-Eleven coffee?
It depends on which one you go to and how early in the day, of course.
They get that pod's been sitting out for 17
starting to
hours.
Add in a lot of qualifiers here, Rob.
Yeah.
I've had decent coffee at 7-Eleven.
I don't think I buy
anything.
I like
how you said good and changed it to decent immediately.
Yeah, I'm not buying anything out of a 7-Eleven that isn't like a bag of Doritos or a soda or something. I don't trust any of the warm food. Now, when I lived in La Center, there was a little bakery up there. It still is. It's called Sadie and Josie's. And if you're ever in La Center, which I don't know why you would be in La Center, or maybe you're going up to A&A, you're going up to the casino, go into town, go to Sadie and Josie's, and they make fresh donuts every day. That place is kick-ass. The mom-and-pop shops are going to be better than the mass-produced ones. But of the mass-produced donuts here in Portland, I'll go Blue Star.
Remember that ad?
Time to make the donuts. Yes.
Because
there's nothing worse than when you buy a donut from like a supermarket or wherever, and you can tell it's been sitting out. It's the stale. It wrecks your whole day.
Brittany Fintel went on a hike recently up to Mount St. Helens. This was this last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
She damn near died, Jason.
Took a tumble?
She did. She says she underestimated the mountain. She underestimated her skill.
She overestimated her skills.
No, she said, her quote is, "I definitely underestimated the mountain. I underestimated my skills and not needing an ice pick at the time."
Wouldn't that be, I think she's incorrect.
I wonder if she's saying she underestimated her skills to survive, but like once she fell.
Oh.
Because she ended up falling.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
She's like, "I thought I was going to die, but I had the intestinal fortitude." She had the Hulk Hogan in her to make it out.
She took a tumble. She's a Navy veteran, and she loves to hike, and she has a service dog named Indy. A black German Shepherd, and she says, literally, I could see the summit from where I was. She thought she was going to make it, but she took a wrong step, and she fell 400 feet down the side of the mountain.
I guess she hit a lot of rocks and whatnot on your way down.
She slammed into several rocks, hitting both her head and her hip on the way down. She said, "Once I slipped, I thought I was dead." She said, "I thought it was the end of me." It was not. She was stunned to be alive. You know, she came to.
Yeah.
Probably had little birdies and stars.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
Flip that.
That's the birdie noises.
Flip that. I mean, I don't know. There's music behind it, but I liked it. And then she said that the dog, of course, didn't trip.
No. Did the dog go
much
down?
More agile.
Oh, yeah. Did the dog go down and...
He did. Or she... what?
It. Respect its privacy.
That damn thing did. Indy. Yeah, she said that the dog showed up. He ran all the way down there and didn't call 911, idiot dog, but...
For heaven's sakes, dog.
Did quit, lay by her side.
Quit laying down by me. Go get some help. Go lassie it. Go bark at someone and tell them that Timmy, or in this case, whatever her name is down the well.
She says he was the first on the scene. He pretty much helped me so I didn't go into shock and everything. He licked my face and, you know, my hand wounds and everything. How about that? I love dogs, man.
Way to go, dog.
A group of hikers witnessed her fall and rushed to help as well. One hiker just happened to be a nurse. Another was a member of a search and rescue team on a different mountain. Man, she's lucky.
Yeah.
They knew exactly what to do and stopped the bleeding, called for help. Everything down, everything down to who rescued me, to Indy, you know, being amazing. It was just pretty much nothing short of a miracle.
I am amazed at how many people take climbing a mountain to be just a, oh, yeah, what are you going to do? I got to go climb the mountain.
Well, I think if you do it enough, you probably get a little cavalier up there.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I got this.
I've been up here before.
You're still climbing a mountain.
Right.
How about respecting the mountain? Don't underestimate the mountain, all right?
Meanwhile, isn't that crazy? She fell 400 feet and lived. There was a woman at Lacamas Park who fell 35 feet.
Died. Well, here's the thing. It's not about the height. It's about the incline. Like if
I don't know what the situation with the Lacamas Park one.
Yeah,
was.
if you're falling down a slope, right? You know, it may be 400 feet, but you can kind of roll. Whereas if you fall and you free fall 20, 30 feet, I think they say two times your height is on a free fall is enough to kill you. So you don't have to be that high up as opposed to, I'm not going to say that it's not falling, but sliding or rolling or, you know, whatever down a hill, slightly different than if you just, you know, you Peter Pan it off a cliff.
Tweet, 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 tweet. Oh, there we go.
This is the birdies.
Cute.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
So she is now recovering in the hospital, the woman from the Mount St. Helens fall. She had a concussion. She needed stitches. She has a broken rib and a small fracture on her spine. She's expected to make a full recovery in 6 to 8 weeks. She did start a GoFundMe to help pay her medical bills and the cost of taking care of her dog while she's in the hospital. She had to hire a walker for Indy.
All right, go Indy. Donate if you want.
Because the damn dog can't walk itself.
I don't think I'm donating to someone that fell down a mountain, but still.
So anyway, yeah, crazy story. 400 feet, that's a long way to go.
Stop falling, people.
Long way to fall. Hey, good news on home prices in Portland.
Not according to Mike.
No, there's good news.
Is there?
Yeah, I've got stats.
All right.
Coming up next in the news on The Fan.
This is a British Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, 4:51. Hot 5 at 5 is chock full of sports news, and it's coming up at 5 or shortly thereafter. We're in the middle of the news for today. And in honor of Mike Lynch, who told you earlier in our broadcast that he is very excited today because he and his wife, Kelsey, made an offer on their first home.
He seems very nervous. I don't know if excited is the right word. You seem terrified.
Well, it's a...
I just said this to Nemec. Because he just bought a house too.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I just feel
yes.
They say congratulations.
Nemec's having a baby too.
He's an idiot.
I feel uncomfortable. I'm excited. I'm scared. I'm stressed. I'm like anticipating good news. I'm anticipating. I don't know how to feel. All the feelings at once. I'm just uncomfortable.
And look, it's a scary process. You've never been through it. It's
like the first time Mike got a prostitute. I mean, no, that's not at all what it's like, right, Mike? No, you're just excited about
like
the home.
First time you got a, you popped a, like, wait, what's going on down here? What is this?
Something good, but I'm not certain.
I kind of feel like I got a pee, but.
By the way, did you see what Garoppolo's up to?
Yeah, we'll get to that. All it's right. On the list. Hey, so, I know what I was going to tell
you. It's a hell of a transition.
Home prices in Portland, it's going nuts here. At least it was earlier in the year. Yeah. It's slowed down now. And what they're saying now is that home prices here have risen slower than the national average for the first time since 2012.
That's good news, I guess, but they're already so stinking high that no one can afford to buy anything, so sorry?
The lower-priced homes. So the national average, this is back from April. Mm-hmm. The national average was 6.4% increase here, only 5.9%. And the lower-priced homes in like the $335,000 range or whatever, they still rose almost 10%.
Yikes.
That's where Mike's shopping.
Yeah.
So it's like, because you know, there's a shortage of those, right? Like, there's a lot of people that want that, you know, the, you know, just that affordable number. And
well, because in study and development, not everyone can afford $500,000 for a starter home.
So just 2 years ago, Portland led the nation with the highest over the national average rise. Mm-hmm. And now we're sagging behind the national
average. And someone here points out correctly that mortgage rates are rising, which makes it even harder to buy.
Yeah.
But I look to refinance my home to a 15, and going from a 30 to a 15, my interest rate would have gone up. That's how high mortgage rates have risen over the last, what, I bought my home 2.5 years ago.
I saw a list here, cities in danger of a housing crisis. Is your city on the list? I can tell you that Portland is not on the list.
As far as like a bubble?
Yeah, like a bubble. Because, and they're doing this based off of percentage of the homes that are already underwater,
mm-hmm.
the total number of homes underwater, and delinquency rate for homes underwater.
Yeah.
Number one is Newark, New Jersey. 30% of homes are underwater in Newark, New Jersey.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the fear. If there's any dip, like we talked about it. If with Mike, I mean, he's been saving. You've been saving for a couple years here, and obviously you're pretty nervous because this is a big, you know. I'm sure this tightens your belt a little bit.
It does, but I mean, as I've been told by everybody, your first house to get into is the hardest because you don't have the equity of anything to use to buy a new home.
But when the home prices are so high, any sort of dip or people that are at the very top, like you're just being able to get in, that's where you get into trouble. You get a lot of those people that are struggling to get into a home. And then if something bad happens, you know, that's when you find yourself in some trouble.
Mike, would you have the balls to take your down payment that you've worked so hard to save for and put it on one hand of blackjack?
Of course not. Are you kidding me?
That would be the greatest thing ever.
Are you kidding?
We could film it.
It's almost the entirety of our savings. Why?
Because
so you could double it in like 5 seconds.
And then,
that's why.
Then you don't
or
have
lose
to...
it all and stay in an apartment for 10 more years.
But hey, then you lose it all. You're just back to square one.
Yeah, you're back to where you're at now.
I'm not going to kill you.
Do
it's
it.
Just, it's only money. You can Do make
it.
More.
Oh, it's, right. It's only money. Only many, many years of work.
Yeah. I know. That would be hard to do, but it would be sweet if he did.
Well, we talked about it. Lynch's home, if he buys this, and we won't say how much, Lynch's home will be more than my house. It's,
wow.
Yeah.
The producer makes more than the big star funny guy or whatever
Mike Lynch,
is.
House greater than mine.
Wow. Number two on this list, cities in danger of a housing crisis, Chicago. Number three, Hartford. Number four, Jacksonville. Number five, Baltimore.
Also on Housing News, the Brady Bunch home is for sale if you want to buy it.
Yeah, like 1.9 million or something?
Yeah, it's like 1.8 and change, like 1.85.
Does it look the same?
Yeah, it looks exactly the same.
And it's in Los Angeles?
Yeah, somewhere outside of LA. And it's 2,400 square feet, 2-bedroom, 3-bath, and it's probably going to be torn down.
Why?
Because it's on like half an acre and developers want it.
Oh, it's that big of a property?
Yeah, it's on like half an acre, I guess, where it's at, which is pretty rare. And so they're saying someone's going to come in and just, you know, demolish the thing.
I see it here. Looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, look at that. Nothing was filmed inside the home.
Just the, okay. So that's not the layout?
No.
The stairs and the
walls? No, all that.
Alice's little lair back there?
No, that was all done on a sound studio. Nothing was shot inside. It was just used for the exterior shots.
Oh.
But they say it's, at least on the listing, and I don't know how true this is, but they say it's the most, it's the second most photographed house in the United States.
Really?
Yeah.
Behind?
Well, that's obvious.
It is?
Yeah. Should be. Not even close. The most famous house in the United States. It's a big one.
Oh, the White House.
The White House. That would be the first. I thought maybe Graceland would be number two, but they're claiming this is the second most. And that's the other reason they said it might be torn down is that whoever buys it, you got to deal with a lot of, you know, people coming by and stopping in front of your house. And
it's like the Goonies house.
Yeah, same sort of thing. So they're saying the developer might just tear the thing down and then just be done with it.
All right, that's in the news. Coming up next, it's the Hot 5-5. Oregon State loses a key player. Carmelo Anthony gets traded. And what else do we have? Oh, the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, lists his expansion cities, and an open update, all next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.